So we're going to read from Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, a few verses. Yesterday we read text 13, and we're going to read 14, 15, and 16. And I don't see very many Bhagavad Gitas here, but I'll chant the verse, and if you have a good memory, you can chant with me. If you have a friend that has a book, you can look over their shoulder, look at their book. Text 14. Yada sarve pravriddheto pralayam yati dehabrit todottama vidam lokan Amalan pratipadyate yada sattve pravriddheto pralayam yati dehabrit tadottamam vidam lokan Amalan pratipadyate. Translation, when one dies in the mud of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets of the great sages. Purport. One in the mud of goodness attains the higher planetary systems like Brahmaloka or Janaloka, and there enjoys godly happiness. The word amalan is significant. It means, quote, free from the modes of passion and ignorance, unquote. There are impurities in the material world, but the mode of goodness is the purest form of existence in the material world. There are different kinds of planets for different kinds of living entities. Those who die in the mode of goodness are elevated to the planets where great sages and great devotees live. And then the other two modes are in the next verse. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangishu jayate tata palinas tamasi mudham yonishu jayate. By the way, that's not good. Mudham yonishu jayate. Not good. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities in places like Hyderabad and New York. When one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. Purport. Some people have the impression that when the soul reaches the platform of human life, it never goes down again. This is incorrect. According to this verse, if one develops the mode of ignorance, after his death, he is degraded to an animal form of life. From there, one has to again elevate himself by an evolutionary process to come again to the human form of life. Therefore, those who are actually serious about human life should take to the mode of goodness and in good association transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there is no guarantee that the human being will again attain to the human status. Well, maybe they'll just cover these because the previous set of verses are the symptoms of the modes. This is where one goes who's in this or that and the other mode. And then the next one is about work. Work according to the modes of nature. They look like this, that, and the other, according to the three modes. And of course, work has its result. So they're not at all disconnected. They're definitely connected. So Uttama
Vidam.
The mode of goodness carries one to the Uttama Vidam. The Prabhupada has translated that the planets of the sages. Uttama Vidam Lokan. Uttama Vidam. Those who have the Uttama qualities, the topmost qualities. So, one might think one would go to heavenly planets. Here Prabhupada is translating as one goes to the planets of the great sages and the great devotees. So, take a look at the 14 planetary systems. There are different ways of looking at the planetary systems. One is divisions of three, and to my knowledge, at least, all religions have that idea. Even Buddhism has that idea, where their goal is nothingness. They have an idea of a heavenly region. So, where we are, then above is heaven and below is hell. So, upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, the three. That's one system of analysis. Then there's another where there's 14 planetary systems. And the Earth planet is in the middle. So there's seven above and seven below. And so we're of the seven above, it's number one of the seven above. And then there's six more above that. But it's basically in the middle region of the universe. And those of you that are familiar with Brahma Gayatri Mantra, that the first three of the seven are identified. Bhu Loka, Bhuvar Loka, Svarga Loka. And then there's four more above that. So this verse, according to what Prabhupada is translating it, is those situated in the mode of goodness go above the heavenly planets. So the four above are Janaloka, Tapaloka, Maharloka, and Brahmaloka. Excuse me. Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka in that sequence. And we don't find a whole lot of it described in the Vedic literature, but if you have the good fortune of reading Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is something of a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam by Sanatana Goswami, you'll find out a whole lot about those other four planets. At least three of the four planets. It speaks of Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. So not so much about Maharloka. I'll give a little description. This is like, if you want to be in the mode of goodness and go to these places, here's the advertisement. The travel invitation. Janaloka is described as a place for householders who are particularly interested in yajna. And they're not just particularly interested in yajna, they're particularly interested in making offerings to the Supreme Lord. In other words, they're not karmakanda performers who want something. They want to make offerings to the Supreme Lord. And they're so absorbed in the Supreme Lord that when they make offerings into the sacrificial fire, the Lord appears with his hands extended and he receives their offerings. And when the yajna is over, he recedes into the fire. So they hurry up and create another yajna. So they try to have, as far as possible, a continuous yajna so they can directly have the darshan of the Supreme Lord and place offerings into his extended hands. And those who reside there, they're identified in Brihat Bhagavatamrita as householders, but not householders that have material desire. I've been lecturing a little sequentially in the third canto, now in the section, chapter 22, where Kardama Muni is about to be married to Devahuti. And it's puzzling in one sense, because he is a perfected being, and yet he's characterized as having material desire. So how can a perfected being have a material desire? Well, so the material desire is he wants a wife so that he can have children, and then when the children are there, he leaves his family to go back to the forest and continue striving for perfection which he has already attained. I mean, the perfection that he's going to attain, he's already seen the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Where do you go from there? He will receive the Son, as a Son, the personality of Godhead. And then when his son is of age to take care of Devahuti, he goes back to the forest to meditate on the personality of Godhead, who is his son. So it's a little puzzling. Except that he's showing by example. Then it's easy to understand. He's teaching by example. He doesn't need to achieve anything. He is acting in a way to instruct and guide and set example for others. So if you happen to have a son who's the personality of Godhead, now you know what to do. You can also set a nice example, and when your son is of age to take care of your wife, you can go to the forest and perfect your life. But the consideration of his entering into household life is because there's some desire. But he doesn't have a desire like, you know, the rest of us may have desire to have the association of a wife. Similarly, actually, he's more exalted than the residents of Janaloka, but it's described in Janaloka, the wives are simply there to assist their husband. This is what's described about Devahuti's duties before they're married. When Kardama Muni says, yes, I will accept Swayambhuva, I'll accept your daughter as my wife, he gives four reasons. Because there's matching of age, quality, and character. And the third is, she is very suited to assist. Actually, it's Swayambhuva Manu. She's very suited to assist you in your household duties. Not like she's willing to just stay at home and do household duties. She's willing to assist you in your household duties. Because he's a brahmana, she, side by side with her good husband, although she was the princess with royal opulence, is now living in a forest with nothing. Because her husband doesn't have material wealth, he has another kind of wealth. He has austerity. You've heard the saying before, austerity is the wealth of a brahmana, which is another contradictory sounding thing. Austerity means you do without things. And that's wealth. But it's not just doing without things, it's control of the mind and senses for achieving a higher purpose. That's the wealth. The higher purpose is the greater wealth, which isn't measured, cannot be measured by gold or any other commodity. You can't purchase a relationship with the personality of Godhead with any amount of wealth. So the residents of Janaloka, they're householders, but their wives are simply assisting their good husbands in sacrifice, and they're by their sides when the Supreme Lord is there to receive their offering. So they get the same benefit as their husbands, seeing the Supreme Lord as he's making offerings directly into his own hands. And they're very happy. They don't need to go anywhere except the next yajna. And needless to say, there's some problems. One of the problems is, as in any place in the material world, there's birth, death, disease, and old age. So that they have a long duration of life, but they're going to die. And another is during, just like the phases of time, not only life has its beginning and end, but when there's a partial annihilation, there's a nice description of the partial annihilation. There's total cosmic annihilation, that's at the end of Brahma's life. And there's a partial annihilation at the end of each day. And here's what happens at the end of the day of Brahma. Long drought, 100 years of no rain. 100 years of no rain. Everything is parched dry. And then from the bottom of the universe, you know who, from his mouths comes some fire. And the whole lower part of the universe just ignites in flames. So everything is crisped. So that's up to including the heavenly planets. They're annihilated at the end of Brahma's day. So Janaloka is just above that. It gets really hot in Janaloka. Too hot. So they get in their vimanas and they don't even stop at Maharloka. They go pay a visit to the residents of Tapaloka during the night of Brahma because it's a little cooler up there. And then when the fire subsides, it subsides by torrential rain. It's really a practical way to store things because everything is now just ashes. And here comes fire, and it just dissolves in the water. Here comes the water, so it dissolves in the water. It's like a tablet that you put in, its, an Alka-Seltzer or whatever you have here in India. It fizzes, and then you can't even see. It's just water. So that's what happens to the lower three, and then the other seven planetary systems. They're just inundated in a flood. The water subsides, there's ashes everywhere, and it's now Brahma's morning. And he gets up and does his sadhana, and he recreates that, from the heavenly planets on down. Every morning. And then the residents of Janaloka can go back to Janaloka and resume their yajnas. And the duration of his night is for an equal length of the duration of his day, 12 hours and 12 hours. He has a long night. So it's a long time that they can't even be, doing the thing that they like to do so much. Not much is described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita about Maharloka. Tapaloka is renunciates only. No grahasthas allowed. And their program is meditation. Well, three things. Two main things. Meditation, because in their meditation, they see the personality of Godhead. So they stay in meditation for a long time. They really like seeing the personality of Godhead in their trance of meditation. And when the meditation is over, they have some philosophical discussions. They take a little prasadam, take a little rest, and go back to meditating. That's what they do. And the Navayogendras, they're some of the inhabitants. Navayogendras, the nine perfected sons of Maharaj Rishabdev, yes, Navyogendras, they speak in the 11th canto Bhagavatam. So that's where they live, in Tapaloka. When Gopakumar goes there, the four Kumaras, they're also there. Then when he sees them again in Vaikuntha, he recognizes, I thought I saw you. He said, oh, we were just giving them some association, paying a visit. We were on Sankirtan, giving them some association. And then Brahmaloka. And Brahmaloka is the topmost, as it's described here, topmost planet in our universe. So from those, Janaloka up to Brahmaloka, those situated in the mode of goodness may go there. And then those in the mode of passion go where there's fruitive activity. Well, that's like a lot of places in the material world. Fruit of activity. So where there's when you live in a city, you don't so much notice. You just kind of become accustomed to the passion of the city. But when you go outside the city for some time and then you come into the city, it's the passion of the city is tangible. I'll just share a little experience. Regularly, at least once a year, there's an extended retreat at our farm community in mid-Pennsylvania. For those of you that don't know your American geography, it's about a 5-hour drive inland from New York City's a coastal city, and you go inland. It's in the mountains, and it's fantastic agricultural land. It's very, very peaceful, and we have retreats there. So after the retreats, it's like you become retreatified. You know, it's mode of goodness. And then retreat is over, we get in our car and go back to the city. And as you start getting closer to the city, the cars are moving faster. And you can feel the passion of the city as you're like, whoa. So when you live in the city, it's just kind of like that's life. It's like people are moving around fast. That's just lots of traffic. That's what the city is. But there's a mode of nature that's very prevalent, and fruitive activity is driving the machine. The mode of passion is symptomized by fruitive activity, intense endeavor to achieve something. Now, I understand from my discussions with devotees since I've come to India, who was sharing this? Krishnanam was sharing this. The Indian government has made a very conscientious effort to get people to go back to the country and do agriculture and leave the cities. He was specifically describing in Bombay, that for sure, because there's so many ghettos that are unsightly and, you know, the contrasting, literally, like high-rise deluxe places, and down below is the shanties of the ghettos, or whatever you call it here. The government has made efforts to some, I don't know what they do, but you know, give them money or whatever they do to get them to leave those places and go back to the land, probably so they can build some more of those high-rise buildings, because the population of Bombay is growing so much. We need that space to like put up more high-rises. In any case, passion is prevalent in the city life in general. And so one who stays in the mode of passion takes birth in those places. But it's not at all guaranteed that it's going to be in a human form of life. Not at all guaranteed. And mode of ignorance is down into either a lower form of life or a human existence that's very much in the mode of ignorance. As Prabhupada writes here, there are persons who believe that when the soul, once reaching the human form of life, one doesn't go back down again, which is very unreasonable, nor is it scripturally supported. And I've had discussions with people that have that conviction. I don't know how strongly growing Christianity is in India, but I understand it's growing rapidly. And one of the most rapidly growing religions is the Seventh-day Adventists, or the Mormon faith. The Mormon faith? Not familiar with it. It's the fastest growing Christian religion in the world. And they believe a number of things. One of their beliefs is they believe in reincarnation. But one of their beliefs is you can only go up. And it's not reasonable. So, you know, just having a discussion with these people, supposing I'm a murderer, I'm going to go up? What about the bad place, you know, hell, and people that do crimes and, you know, do very vicious things that are hurtful and harmful to themselves and others? They go up? I mean, I can't even remember what their answer is because it wasn't reasonable. But you can only go up. Another, just for your information, in case you happen to run into one of them somewhere along the line, ask them, if you meet a Mormon, ask them, what's the goal? And they may not give you a direct answer, but if you keep probing a little, you know, well, what do you mean, what do you mean, what do you mean? The answer they give you is you can become the creator. You can become Lord Brahma. They don't use Lord Brahma. You can become a creator. You know, they have very strong family values, you know, like Prajapatis. And you become like a super, super Prajapati and you can become Lord Brahma. Part of the reasons it's rapidly growing is they have very strong family values, and that's lacking in the world, and people appreciate the family value. And so that gravitates. And it's not just, you know, it's not in, just in America. They're very active all over the world. All over the world. They have a tithing system where, those of you that are working, just think about this for a minute. 10% of your gross income. Think about that for a moment. 10% of your gross income must be, if you're going to be a Mormon in good standing, it must be given to the church. And it's not to the local church, it's to those folks that sit in Salt Lake. It's centralized. And then and they're very good with public relations. You call them up and they'll tell you how they do it. They do things in, you know, so much percentage goes for new places. So much percentage goes for maintaining places. You know, like they buy carpets in massive quantities so they get a good price and then they dole it out. But they have a huge budget and massive expansion, and it's not at all what Prabhupada wanted us to do, but we don't even have a membership program. I mean, for your information, we're discussing a membership program. We're trying something that Prabhupada said in 1974. 4 and 5 still hasn't been done. One of the things he said to do was form a constitution, draft a constitution. Do you know that we don't have a constitution? We don't have a constitution. So there's a committee that's been working on a constitution, and they've pretty much everything is wrapped up except this one thing. What's a member? Part of the obstacle of what's a member, I'm way away from Bhagavad Gita, but anyway. One of the problems with what's a member is in different countries, the law says if I'm a member, I have rights, like legal rights. I've got teeth and claws, then you better do what I say or I'll use my teeth and claws because I'm a member. So we have to be very careful in different countries with what being a member means. So that's kind of one of the obstacles. Without all the obstacles, it's taken like 4 years and now we have like a very bland, broad thing that seems like it's going to get its way into the Constitution. Very broad. But the question of tithing is one that is like, should we put it in? Why not? Then comes, you know, well, who's going to decide what happens with it? Would you be interested to know what the budget is for ISKCON Global? Would you be curious to know what the budget is? I know what the budget is. Would you be curious to know? It's about $80,000. I don't know what that is in rupees. What is it in rupees? Who's the money person? $80,000 in rupees. 5 crore? That's for all of this kind of global budget. 80,000 rupees. $80,000. Is that right? 5 crore? Huh? 14 lakhs. 48 lakhs. 48 lakhs. No crores, just lakhs. 48 lakhs. A half a crore. Right? 48 lakhs. Global. You know, to grow the Hare Krishna movement around the world. It's just like to maintain it. Just like to the bare minimum. Anyway, it's embarrassing. So we need things that are going to benefit the world. Anyway, I'll get back to Bhagavad Gita. Mode of goodness, mode of ignorance, mode of passion. So one can go down. Some believe that you can't go down. You can go down. And down and down and down. I don't know how they get it that you can't go down, because they certainly have a conception of hell. And what's down there? I mean, who occupies that place? Anyway, some have that idea. But it's actually the other way. As Prabhupada, he only says it in one sentence. From there, you know, like the lower animal form, from there one has to again elevate himself, comma, by an evolutionary process, comma, to come again to the human form of life. So really, from the lower forms, I mean, it's not just animal, it's further down also. Those life forms do not accrue karma. They're bound by previous karma, and that previous karma, according to chapter 13, is manifest in the form of a body. You get a body according to karma and also guna. And for a duration, according to karmic law, the sinful reaction is being incinerated or burnt to some degree. So when that is burnt to some degree and the body is then given up, consciousness goes up a notch. Boop. And to match consciousness and the residual guna and karma, one gets another body, not accruing any further karma, but eliminating previous karma gradually, gradually, by evolution of consciousness, and thus evolution through different forms of life. One, after many, 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 very many births and deaths in the lower species, may again come to the human form of life. And the human form of life has a lot of facility. And with facility comes responsibility. So what the facility is, we can make choices with the lower life forms. Their choices are greatly restricted. I mean, if a dog has a choice, I can bark or not bark. I can wag my tail or not wag my tail. He doesn't have a lot of choices. I can bite the person passing by, or I can sit and look at them. They're not a lot of choices. The human form of life has much more freedom because there's less restriction of past karma. And the modes of nature are also more elevated. So there's more freedom. There's more free will options. And with those free will options, one can then choose. My choices are more open. Because my choices are more open, I'm then held responsible for those choices. So I can go up, or I can go down, or I can stay in the same place, depending upon the choices that I make. The restriction of choices is there from my past karma in a lower life form. By evolutionary process, Prabhupada is saying, so I just broke it down a little bit. One can go to a higher life form, the next higher life form, the next higher life form, the next higher life form. And then according to the modes of nature, from the mode of goodness, the cow, the mode of passion, the lion, and the mode of ignorance, the monkey, in their next life can become a human. So Prabhupada liked to say, perhaps Darwin in his previous life was a monkey. Because many of his ideas are very ignorant. So these two verses are describing the destination of the soul after a particular life based upon the modes of nature. So it's certainly not yatama tatopat. Whatever you do, you achieve the same destination. Definitely not. We think of free will choice commonly. We think of free will choices in terms of karma. I make a good choice, I make therefore do a good action, and therefore get a good reaction. Or vice versa, bad choice, bad action, bad reaction. But the modes of nature are equally involved in determining destination besides karma is guna. So, you know, everything that we do, the foods that we eat, the way that we speak, the work that we do, how we, you know, make our multiple free will choices is going to determine the mode of nature with which I'm conditioned. The association that I keep is going to very much affect the mode of nature that is influencing me. And that's going to determine my destination. There's an interplay between the modes of nature and karma, and the modes of nature and karma and destination, the destination of the soul. That's just these two verses. So I think we'll stop with that and see if there's any comments or questions, discussion. Yes?
Maharaj, here we find in Bhagavad Gita that even those who are in such refined modes of goodness, they only go to these planetary systems. But we see that devotees, except for the fact for that they have been chanting, so much of infection of the modes is there, and when devotees die, normal devotees die, many times we hear that they went back to Godhead, they went back to Godhead. For me it is very difficult to, hearing Bhagavad Gita and then to trust that they have actually gone back to Godhead.
Me too.
And another part of it is, then where is the part of compassion, like based on some extraordinary mercy, then somebody can go back, or And if people ask me like, or share with me, I can't confidently say that, yes, your relative has gone back. There is something that prevents me to confidently say, is it correct like that? Or should I also say that, yes, they have gone back to Godhead?
Well, you have to use your good conscience. You don't want to, on the one hand, disturb them, and the other hand, you don't want to say something you don't have conviction in. So you can give a nice, we are sure they're in Krishna's hand. Etc. Your relative was a very good person. I'm sure their next destination is further facility for God's work. Depending upon the person. You don't have to say, no, they didn't go back to Godhead. How can you make a statement like that? Don't you read Bhagavad Gita? You know, we don't want to disturb their mind. We don't want to also make false representations. I was just hearing some recordings of Timal Krishnamurti's representation of Jayananda. Because Timal Krishnamurti was very close to Jayananda, and he was close to Prabhupada. And when Jayananda left his body, it came out in the form of a letter that was then sent around to all of ISKCON. But it was something that he described, because he was there, Prabhupada spoke. Surely he has either gone back to Godhead, or he's in a heavenly planet where he's continuing in his devotional service. That was the day that Prabhupada spoke, and the letter went out to all over ISKCON. I remember seeing the letter. And then Timal Krishnamurti described that the next day, Prabhupada was in a very contemplative mood and said firmly, surely he has gone back to Godhead. Because in other places, Prabhupada would say to go back to Godhead, then one must be completely free from any attraction of this world. If there's even the slightest attraction for enjoying in this world, one will take birth in that place where one has some aspiration to enjoy, even if it's just a curiosity thing. I wonder what it's like in such and such loka. Pew! So it's not an easy thing. Okay? Here's another question. On the path of following devotional service, we see sometimes that all the anarthas pop up suddenly when we think that we've already conquered that anartha or crossed that barrier. So what to do? What to do is keep going. It's like the blades of the fan example. Just don't plug in again. Don't turn the on switch on. If the blades of the fan continue spinning, don't be surprised. Just don't connect again with old ways. You know, consciously, knowingly do that. There's a very nice image, a visual image, that helps me understand how this works. Go sometime, so picture in your mind having been, as you sometime may have been in the past, by a lake or a pond. Let's say a pond of water. And you're standing there and it's like a nice picturesque scene. And you see some bubble of air rise from the bottom of the pond, kind of wiggle its way to the top of the surface of the water. It sits there for a moment and then bursts, and the air emerges with the air. And then over there, another small one, there's maybe a big one, and then a few of them in a stream like that. So what it is underneath the water there's mud, And within the mud, there's organic material, and the organic material is decomposing. And it's whatever it is, carbon dioxide or methane or whatever it is, forms, and it creates a little pressure, a little more pressure in the mud, and finally enough pressure that it pokes its way through the mud and wiggles its way through the water and then merges with the air. It's just decomposing organic material in the mud. So now take a stick and start stirring the mud. This is called chanting Hare Krishna. Take a stick and start stirring the mud, and all this, you know, these air pockets just come rising to the surface. And then you let the mud settle, and it's, you don't see any air coming up anymore. But wait a while, because there's still organic material in the mud, and after some time it's going to come out again. So there's a tendency that there's a tendency to slacken when we're comfortable. Complacency. I remember having a discussion about this someplace where Arvind Daksha was present, and we're talking about complacency. Remember that discussion. When there is complacency, or you slacken in submission, what happens? Material energy and the tendency of looking around at the opportunities for material enjoyment, contemplating material enjoyment, begins where there's complacency. So go back to submission, and there's absorption or intensity of focus on achieving Krishna's shelter, pleasing Krishna, finding Krishna's happiness. No complacency, no room for that stuff. It just doesn't happen. But that stuff starts to happen when there's complacency. I'm not suffering. Feeling kind of comfortable. And in comes Maya. So the solution, this is, you know, what to do is the question. Stay focused on achieving the goal of life. Know what the goal of life is. And according to your capacity, you strive for that. You like strive with your chanting, with your reading, with your relationships, with your work, with your study, and with, you know, with life. Krishna. And from time to time, this residual thing may arise, and you don't bother with it. You don't invest consciousness in it. It's just the residual action. You stay focused on bhajana kriya and taking proper shelter and hearing and applying the messages that you've heard. You tolerate those other things, knowing where they arise from. Matra sparshastu kaunteya. That's where they arise from. Contemplating enjoyment through the senses of sense objects, that's where they arise from. And that tendency is very, very, very deep. Don't go there. Go instead to Sat, the realm of the eternal, and continue to invest there. You tolerate the other and continue to invest in Sat, activities of devotional service, and the object, Krishna. Continue to invest in that. Invest consciousness there. Yes. We don't belong to it. We just happen to be here. Yeah.
So, so my question is here, like, people in the above the Swarga planet, they have very refined consciousness, and that kind of refined consciousness helps them to practice devotion service better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like,
we're less fortunate.
Yeah, we are very, very less fortunate.
Yes.
And my question is that, could we ever in this lifetime come to that refined consciousness and above that.
More than that. More than that.
But the question is like, it looks like it's rare. It's like rare diamond.
Well,
that's what.
Even to be engaged in devotional service, it's rare. Look around, or read in Bhagavad Gita, and it's rare. It's not just rare in Kali Yuga. It was rare in Dwarpa Yuga. It's rare. You know, Satya Yuga is a different thing, but it's rare. That's okay. Because of receiving the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, our misfortune is reversed. That's where faith should go. And it's a reality, even if one doesn't understand it. It's a fact. And the more one understands it, the stronger one's faith can be, and then there's protection. But if I turn my attention elsewhere, then that protection isn't with me. It's a function of consciousness. And we're not refined. But we're recipients of great mercy. That's our treasure. So we carefully protect our treasure. Pay a lot of attention to that, because that's the compensation, or the dispensation is the right word. The dispensation for the unfortunate souls of this age. This very special mercy that comes from Lord Chaitanya, Mahabharanaya. He's not only giving love of God, he's giving Vrajaprem. And we're zero qualified, minus qualified. But that's where our attention should go. We cultivate that. Being a job holder, one has to focus on direct spiritual activity for 8 hours. What is that in scripture? Is that something that you're teaching here? Being a job holder, one has to focus on direct spiritual activity for 8 hours. Huh? Those persons who live here and do the morning and evening program, it's 8 hours. That's the message? Okay. Due to the mode of passion, I am obsessed in office problems. Kindly suggest how to do spiritual activity with the mode of goodness. And the language is a little rough, but I get the picture. This question is very similar to the question of yesterday evening. Is that same person here who asked the question? Who's sitting right over there? Yes, there we go. So you can find this person and answer the question. We don't have to submit ourselves to the conditioning influences of office problems. You know, the mode of passion in the office and how people conduct themselves and speak and so forth. We can be transcendentalists within a place that's the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance or the mode of goodness. We can be transcendentalists in those situations. So much depends upon how you do those 8 hours of devotional practice properly. And then carry that spiritual strength with you into the workplace. And you practice and you practice and you practice and you get spiritual strength. It carries with you. The person who's asking this question, maybe you should ask some of the senior members, grihasthas, who go to the workplace like you do, and ask them, how do you do it? Because it's doable. I mean, I'm giving you a theoretical, and they can give you some practical explanations. But the principle is very strong conviction in and practices of sadhana bhakti. Purifies and gives spiritual strength, which you then carry into the practical activities that you do in your life. Okay. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Are you a Prabhupada follower? Trying to be? Okay, I'll take your question.
Maharaji, first of all, thank you for a nice class.
Okay.
Maharaji, you said that if you have a little curiosity, we have to come back again in this world.
If we have any?
Curiosity, little curiosity about this material world.
So imagine you're a spirit soul, you've left the body, and you're traveling in an upward direction because you've been a good person. And then you're thinking, well, there's Tapaloka, and I wonder what it's like over there. Like that.
Maharaji, many times we hear devotees saying that if I have blessings of devotees, if I have blessings of Guru, I'll cross this ocean of birth and death. So, Maharaji, ultimately what it takes, I mean, blessings of devotees or my own consciousness, my own devotion, what it takes to...
You think there's a difference between the two? How are you going to get good consciousness without the blessings of the devotees?
Thank you. Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
You've answered your own question. Thank you very much. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, I have two questions.
Two questions.
One is, like, I know a group of people who also do charity for, 10% of their money they give to a particular organization, and then they do consider one of the head as their God. And this really disturbs me, but when I come to think of myself, I'm like, okay, I am also in a quest of searching a guru and devote my life to him. So, am I contradicting myself? What do I really want to do? Am I going to follow one person and consider him, his orders as God's order? So, this creates little confusion. If you can elaborate on that.
Okay, don't ask the second question yet. Could you repeat the essence of what she's asking? Could you get it? Did you get it? Did you get it? Not sure. Can you try again? Say it slower.
Yes. When I see others devoting their life, considering one person as their God.
One person as their God?
Yes.
God or guide?
God.
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 G-O-D.
G-O-D, yes sir.
One person is their God. I mean like yes. God, one supreme God.
Yes.
Okay.
So, when I... And they want to devote all their life to his...
They want to devote their life to God.
To his... Whatever... Yes. To that person who is living.
To God. That person.
Yes. Yes.
God.
Yes.
Okay. They want to devote their life to God.
Yes.
Okay.
Even their children who are in... Like, I'm a teacher and their children are in my class. They consider that person as God.
Who? Which that person? Same one. That one?
Yes.
They consider that person as God and they're devoting themselves to him. So what else? What else?
So when that disturbs me.
Why does it disturb you?
Because when I think that I want to search a guru and devote my life to his instructions, then it's contradicting in my mind ki, am I going to do the same thing? Or how is it different? Like,
so where does Guru fit into the picture if you're supposed to devote yourself to God? That's your question? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's do this one. One of Prabhupada's disciples named Saradiya, very nice Mataji, Sarathi asked Prabhupada, is it all right to pray to Krishna? He said, why do you ask that? He said, because you have taught us it's not good to jump over the spiritual master. So I'm happy to pray to you. But is it okay to also pray to Krishna? A little bit like your question, yeah? So Prabhupada chuckled and he said, how can you, something like this one over here, how can you think of Krishna minus the spiritual master? You only know about Krishna because of the spiritual master. And how can you think of the spiritual master separate from Krishna? So it's certainly okay. Where you're praying to one, the other is there, and vice versa. They're inseparable. And so it's not divided allegiance or loyalty. It's the spiritual master is to be understood. Is to be understood as the representative of, like Prabhupada gives the government example of an ambassador. So when an ambassador goes to visit a country, he's honored as if it's the country. He's honored, and if it's, you know, sometimes it works the other way. If they want to like say something bad about a country, they go and make a noise in front of their consulate or something. Say something bad and pick it or burn it or something. It's an assault statement about the whole country. So here's the ambassador, and he comes. He's honored as if he's the country, although he's just a person. He's given some gift. It doesn't belong to the ambassador. It belongs to the country. You know, like say, in the royal times, a messenger is sent from the king, and he's treated as if he's the king. And they give him some gifts that are to go to the king. He's not the king, but he's the representative of the king. Like that. The spiritual master is the direct representative of Krishna. Read in Nectar of Devotion, you'll find it explained. He's to be accepted as non-different from, although he's different from. He's honored as Krishna, although he's not Krishna. Because he's a confidential representative of Krishna. So like that, it's not divided, oh, now I have to have two. It's one. Go ahead, your second question.
You explained about animals, that they don't have any karmas. They are just having the reactions. So my question is...
Anger?
Animals,
okay.
My question is, do human interactions with animals have impact on their elevation? For example, if humans are killing the animals, secondly, if like humans keep them as pets, whether a pious man keep any animal as pet, and some impious humans also keep animals as pets.
If an animal gets some association with a human, the animal might become elevated. And if the human associates with the human may get degraded. That's what you're asking, that question?
Yes.
It so much depends upon, generally yes, but it very much depends upon consciousness. Krishna liked cows. He still does like cows. And cows are the mode of goodness. And so the Vaishyas, one of their occupations is Goraksha, protection of cows. They become elevated through that service of protecting the cows. Because the cows are in the mode of goodness and the Vaishya is less than the mode of goodness. But he's being benefited by that, because it's a religious principle. So much depends upon the consciousness behind. I could elaborate. You want to hear some elaboration? You know, some there are. Do you have SPCA here in India? Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Do you have such a thing here?
Yes, we have PETA.
PETA. Okay. Yeah. Same idea. So, if I think of the animal in terms of the body, that bodily consciousness doesn't serve to greatly elevate the animal. But if I think in terms of Dharma, and here's a soul that's part of the praja within the kingdom, then they are to be protected on a religious principle. So same activity, but consciousness can be different. And then there's like this very amazing example of Shivananda Sen. You know from Chaitanya Charitamrita who Shivananda Sen is? He's a very elevated devotee of Lord Chaitanya who lived up here in Bengal, and when the devotees came down to Puri every year, he looked after 300 people making the, you know, they didn't have a train, hop on the whatever it is, express. And it was like village to village, and he took care of all the taxes and tolls and the Mughal emperors and, you know, all the dangerous things and river crossings and where they would stay in their meals and everything. He was that kind of a person. He was really good at it. He was expert at it. So in the course of their travel, there was a stray dog. And the stray dog joined them. So Shivananda Sen treated the dog like one of their members. One day, before he took rest, he made sure the dog got his food. One day the dog was missing. He sent 10 men in all directions to go find the dog and make sure he had something to eat. When they couldn't find the dog, he was very upset. He felt upset with himself. When he got to, because the dog was a recipient of Shivananda Sen's mercy, when he got to Puri, he saw the dog, listen to this, sitting in front of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was taking the pulp from the inside of a coconut, holding it in his hand, and asking the dog to chant, Hare Krishna! And Lord Chaitanya threw some pulp, coconut, and he caught it in his mouth and would chew it. Shivananda Sen went and paid his obeisances before the dog. Be the recipient of Lord Chaitanya's mercy like that. Because of being the recipient of the Sen's mercy, he received that mercy. Everyone was amazed. A dog chanting. But they witnessed it. And then suddenly, in a day or two or a short while thereafter, the dog disappeared and everyone understood the dog went back to Godhead. Because he had received Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So it depends. The answer to your question is it depends on the consciousness of the person. Commonly consciousness is not elevated, so commonly consciousness becomes, it goes down when associating with entities of a lower motive nature. People who anyway, it's not so much. Mercy is shown by a Vaishnava to animals in different ways than keeping them as pets and joining PETA or the SPCA. Common for Vaishnavas is a place where prasadam may be left for birds to come and take prasadam. People sometimes do this. They go to the parks and they feed bread. But devotees will take prasadam. I know one family that there was like a whole bunch of ants and then some squirrels. Anyway, so they would regularly put, and they could set their watch or their clock by the squirrel that would come at such and such a clock. And even in the winter, you know, like in the west where there's snow, and they offer to their deities some nuts and some portion of the nuts would be for the squirrel. The squirrel would come and make sure everything is okay and then eat the nuts and sit there, look at them and chew on the nuts. And then when they were all gone, he'd go away and come back again at 7:45 next morning. And keep him as a pet, but they were giving prasad. And who knows what that's going to do for that living entity in his next life. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Last question. Pass the microphone up, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Go ahead.
Maharaj, due to passionate environment of the passionate city environment, I sometimes...
Which kind of environment?
Passionate city environment.
Passionate environment. Hyderabad.
City, yeah. I feel that let me keep devotional services secondary right now and focus on earning money. And once, like after a while, I'll have enough of money, then I'll be free and I'll easily perform devotional service. So is that thinking correct?
He's saying earn a lot of money and save it so that later on he's in to devotional service.
Boo. You want to know if that's a good idea?
Yes.
Okay, I gave you my answer. No. No. A Vaishnava likes to be compassionate. One who is receiving must also be giving. And one who follows that kind of a plan becomes a victim of the illusory energy in different ways, in a variety of ways. Attachment is one. Never is something enough. It's got to be something more and something more. It's just material energy works that way. Even if for a person of discretion, discrimination, it works that way. As the saying goes, a fool and his money are soon parted. You accumulate. It's not a Vaishnava principle to accumulate. It's a Vaishnava principle to utilize. So utilize. And when you utilize in Krishna's service, you will find there's more. Utilize in Krishna's service, there's more. Not accumulate and there's more. It's utilize in Krishna's service and there's more. In a reasonable manner, where something for emergency, something for necessity, and something for directly in Krishna's service. That's the principle. And when you follow that principle, then there's more. Doors open that weren't open. You think, if things happen by Krishna's arrangement because here's a person who knows how to use resource wisely in his service. It's a different principle. So I'm now expanding on the answer. Boo. It's not a good principle to make decisions upon. Something. I know devotees that have worked in jobs where they get paid like large salaries, and then their wife eventually is working and it doesn't plan out. They can now I can retire and just do devotional service. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. You place yourself in Krishna's hand using the formula that I mentioned, and it happens much quicker. Is that all right?
Yes, Maharaj.
Are you sure? You got that question mark on your forehead. It's like, it's not okay.
Maharaj, to be very honest, money creates a lot of insecurity.
I could tell that you didn't. Okay, go ahead.
Money creates a lot of insecurity. Like.
Money creates a lot of insecurity.
Yeah, so why have lots of insecurity?
Money
get lots of money, you get lots of insecurity. Money creates insecurity. What is secure? So we'll say it the other way. What is secure about having money?
Maharaj, like if we have money, then we can protect ourselves. We have such kind of beliefs.
But who's going to protect your... Who's the better protector, you or Krishna? Money or Krishna?
Krishna.
Okay. It's a statement of faith. So, based just upon hearing from you personally, being honest about it, you need to feel the safety of a certain amount of money, and then I can be secure in Krishna. I can, like, okay, now I can turn my attention to Krishna because I have enough. I'm letting you know that that will never happen. Because this much is never enough. That much is never enough. The point will never be reached where that's enough. Now I can turn my attention to Krishna. It doesn't work like that. Krishna is your protector. Now you have to make a practical plan. Don't be, you know, I don't need to say this to you. You're going to make a practical plan. It's not whimsical. A practical plan that follows the formula that I just described, and you'll find security, because Krishna is the protector, not in situations of difficulty, not money. Something, but that's not safety. Very insecure. And lots of experience with this one, with people that did that, and then a reversal, and the resource went away, and no shelter in Krishna. Read the Avanti Brahman story. 11th canto, chapter, what's the chapter? Avanti Brahman story. You look it up in the 11th canto. Krishna speaking to Uddhava. It's a good one on this topic. Whole chapter on this topic. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.